A survivor of clerical abuse says he will not take part in an independent review commissioned by the Church of England, claiming the process is worse than useless. Matthew Einsam was 16 when he alleges he was raped by the Reverend Trevor Devamanicum in 1984. Mr. Devamanicum took his own life the day before his criminal trial was due to begin 2 years ago. The church is proposing to hold a lessons learnt review to identify both good practice and any failings in the church's handling of the allegations. It will also look at the actions taken by senior bishops, including the Archbishop of York, when Matthew disclosed what had happened to him. Matthew has waived his right to anonymity, and he told me why he believes the Church of England's review could not be truly independent.
Firstly, the review itself is not, as the church keeps saying, independent. They're doing it themselves. And they've told me that the review will go ahead even if I don't participate. And I said, how could that happen? And they said, because we will do it ourselves from our own notes. So the very people who are being investigated write the terms of reference. They want to do it from their own notes and come up with their own version of it. Mm. In regards to being published, they've said that they will decide what is published, when is published. It actually says, I've got the review in front of me. The Director of Safeguarding will share the review with the National Safeguarding Steering Group, and the Director will, in consultation with the Lead Bishop and the Deputy Director for Communications, take all decisions regarding publication of the review. So I'm not even given an input into that.
So what are you going to do now?
We're looking at establishing our own investigation, inquiry, to look at what has happened and invite the church to participate with us, work with us. I will sit down with anybody and work with anybody to get to what actually happened. Yes, people need to learn lessons, but there must also be transparency and accountability. You know, the church I will happily work with, I hope they will work with me. It doesn't seem to be that case at the moment.
But if you do that, Matt, if you have your own review, then don't you face the same issues that you raised for the church, that you wouldn't be independent in doing that?
Well, I would use, and I've spoken to totally independent people to do it, people who are not connected to the Church of England at all, don't really know me at all, apart from an initial conversation, don't know Mr. Devamanicum, totally independent people who are experts in this field. The church cannot do its own. You know, it's wanting to do its own homework. It's wanting to mark its own homework and then say, oh, we've learned lessons and put it in the bottom drawer. I want it to be truly, truly independent.
Matt, what's been the effect of all of this for you personally, going through this rather bureaucratic process, but at the centre of it is the story of appalling abuse which you have experienced?
It's been, if I'm honest, devastating in my life. It is now 7 years since I first disclosed to the bishops, and they ignored it. I've had to go through the rejection from the bishops. I've had to go through all the thing of them imposing a one-year rule and refusing to investigate the abuse. I've had to go through, they even wrote to my abuser and asked my abuser if he thought he should be investigated or not. And then the whole bureaucracy, I've had to put up with bishops not being truthful. The impact on me really has been devastating, and I know from talking to other victims that it has the same impact. It changes life forever. Justin Welby himself has described this as a form of re-abuse, and it never, never, ever goes away. I did say that when I'd been to ICSA, that was it. I was done. I would go give my evidence, and I needed my life back. And suddenly I'm drawn back in again, and the church are trying to control me again. That has a massive impact on anybody's life. It's changed my life. In terms of practical things, I lost my home, my living, my vocation, my everything because of the church.
Matthew Einsen, no one from the Church of England was prepared to come on the programme this morning to respond to Matthew's concerns, but a spokesperson from the National Safeguarding Team told us all aspects of the case will be looked at, and we are in ongoing contact with Matthew about his involvement and feedback. The report and the church's response will be published in full once it is completed. So what is the best practice when you are holding an independent review? Kate Blackwell is a Manchester-based QC who's a regulatory expert and has served as counsel for two independent panels, including the inquiry into the care, treatment and deaths of patients at Gosport War Memorial Hospital in Portsmouth. We asked Kate Blackwell to outline current best practice for all independent reviews.
Well, the starting point is to consider the purpose behind setting up an independent review, that something has gone wrong or someone has been wronged. And it's a search for the truth to shed light on what has gone wrong, both for the benefit of survivors of the tragedy and also for organisations to learn lessons. The duty of an independent review is to scrutinise often complex issues, and recent inquiries, such as the Hillsborough disaster and the deaths of patients at Gosport War Memorial Hospital, have demonstrated that this is best done by a panel of independent experts, each bringing levels of excellence from varying perspectives, examining the issues together and in a way not before contemplated, in order to reach the truth. And it almost goes without saying that the panel or individual reviewer must have complete independence from any party who is involved. And any such review needs to be done as transparently as possible to engender faith amongst survivors that those conducting the review can be trusted and that the review and its end product, the report, has integrity. So there must be maximum possible public disclosure of documentation, which should take place in a two-staged process. First, in terms of the provision of all relevant material to the inquiry by all relevant stakeholders, interested or organisations, in order for the panel, the reviewer, to consider the widest possible range of relevant material, but thereafter ensuring the greatest level of onward disclosure upon publication of the report. And this means no redaction of any content of a published report, except within limited legal frameworks. But the most important aspect, perhaps, of one of these types of independent reviews is the involvement of survivors from the outset, a principle which has come to be known as family first or survivors first. It's imperative for the review to obtain and then maintain the confidence of the survivors.
Well, what you've laid out there really is the best practice approach to a review. Given what you've seen of the terms of reference of this review and what you've heard from Matthew there about his very grave concerns about independence, do you think this church review meets the ambitions that you've just articulated?
It's very difficult to see how any of the strict and important principles which I have set out in best practice are achieved in either what I have seen in the terms of reference or what I have heard from Matthew's complaints.
So you think this falls short of an independent review?
Yes, I do.
And you've also said that it's very important that the complainant, the aggrieved parties in these kinds of reviews, be involved in shaping the terms of reference. What would your advice be to the church at this point, if you are concerned about the independence of the review they've established, in fixing that?
Given what Matthew has said, it's difficult to see how at this stage the church can turn back time, can really seek to engender any sort of faith or confidence that he may have in what they're doing. However, if they were to say, well, we're prepared to start from the very beginning again and to seek Matthew's engagement and to seek his consultation in terms of the identity of the reviewer or a panel of reviewers, and to sit down with him and to meaningfully involve him in drafting the terms of reference, then he might be able to say that he'd be prepared to engage in those circumstances. But unless he feels that he has faith and confidence going forwards that this is going to be an independent review drafted in terms which are wide enough to cover the issues which he feels need to be addressed, then it's, so far as he is concerned, not going to be close to successful.
And that's as far as he's concerned already. He's expressed his concerns about the review and he has no faith and confidence in it. But given the best practice principles you have laid out for us, is this review compromised?
It's compromised before it's even started, because it's not being conducted by a truly independent reviewer. It's not engaged with Matthew in any meaningful way. There is nothing within the terms of reference to ensure maximum possible public disclosure, either in terms of provision of material for the reviewer or indeed in terms of publication of the report. Because although I understand from what I have heard today that the church indicates that there will be publication of the report, the terms of reference also include a provision that before that publication takes place, it will be considered by a member of the church who sits high up in the organisation in order for him to assess whether or not it will be published in an unredacted form or not. And that's simply not good enough.
We asked the Church of England for a response to Kate Blackwell's very serious criticisms, and they said the prospective reviewer is independent and they are taking the review seriously.